Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is The One, 95.1 FM, and of course, in September, celebrating 50 years in Northfield, serving the community, KYMN. Well, it's a Monday morning. It's a lousy Monday morning, kind of raining out and a little bit breezy. And today is the 18th day of June, and it is June Dairy Month in the year is 2018. So a salute to all the, well, the few remaining dairy farmers in Rice County. And it's also the season of festivities, so a lot of things are going around the state of Minnesota. And one of those things that's going to start up is the Minneapolis Aquatennial Queen of the Lakes Scholarship Program that should be coming up in August. And I have a captain of the Minneapolis Aquatennial with me today, and his name is Quentin Moore. And Quentin, welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Oh, thank you so much, Wayne, for having me. I appreciate it. It's a blessing to be here in Northfield today with you.
And, of course, you've been in Northfield on more than one occasion.
Yes, most definitely. We were here for the death of Jesse James reenactment, here for the coronation as well. Obviously, Vanessa Gonzalez, Queen of the Lake, she's from Northfield. Mm-hmm. Second time in the row that's happened. That's huge.
Yep.
Spent the whole weekend with her. So we had 3 days just running around Brooklyn Park, St. Louis Park, and we were in Montevideo, Minnesota. So, yeah, but happy to be back.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's exhaustive. I'll tell you what the deal is. Quentin Moore, of course, is captain of the Aquatennial, so he does travel a lot with the Queen of the Lakes and her two supporters. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I met you through my wife,
yeah.
Julie Eddy.
Yeah.
And she had a busy schedule this past weekend, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So she went to St. Louis Park.
Yep.
And I had made that trip many a times in my convertible, but she, with the help of T.J. Heinrichsen and several other great people in the community, has put together a Northfield float,
which
is something she's always wanted.
Nice.
And so she drives my 7-passenger Buick out there so that the juniors and the big girls, we call them,
yep.
Can ride along.
I see.
And a chaperone for both juniors and the seniors. I don't like to say seniors, but they're the big girls.
Yeah.
And she pulls that trailer wherever she goes, and I'm going, holy cow, I would not even try to pull that thing.
Yeah.
She went through a McDonald's drive-in with it. She wished she wouldn't have, but she had to do a little maneuvering to get out of there.
Hey, got to keep them fed. Got to keep them fed.
So what number were you at the St. Louis Park deal?
Oh, let's see. St. Louis Park. We actually were there for the coronation.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it was nice. And we were there for the parade. We were, what number were we?
This is a big deal, folks, in the world of parades.
Yeah, I think we were like 17 or 18.
Oh.
So closer to the front,
oh.
Which was nice because, you know, sometimes you get stuck in the back and the hour or two-hour parade turns into 4 hours.
I know. It's crazy because I always ask Julie, well, where are you this time?
Yeah.
And so she, I think she might have been like number 58. I'm not sure.
Okay.
And then after she gets done hauling everybody around in the float, she went down to Farmington.
Oh, yeah.
Did you do that?
We did not go down to Farmington. So I know that was Rianne. So she's Aquatennial Princess. That was her homecoming and appreciation day. But Vanessa and I, we were out in Montevideo for a brunch, parade, and then their coronation. So
what happened to Bill?
Bill is still, I believe Bill might have been, if he wasn't down in Farmington, I don't know, maybe sometimes he has.
When Mr. McClure is busy, you cover for him?
Yeah, so okay. What's unique about our family is that sometimes the Queen of the Lakes will be with the Commodore, but other times we'll switch it up so that we all kind of have experience with each other. And it just makes it for I would say a better experience. So you're not just paired up with one person, but, you know, I get to hang out with Rianne and Vanessa as well as Ellie, who's our other Aquatennial princess.
And of course, you use the word family.
Yes.
And that's what it is. These ambassador programs become very close to each other over the years. And the memories are just unbelievable.
Yes.
And the pictures and then the scholarship money. That's a big, big deal.
Most definitely.
And I know that Vanessa Gonzalez from Northfield,
mm-hmm.
who won last year, and of course before her, Carolyn Meyer.
Correct.
And first, like you said, never happened in the Aquatennial history that back-to-back the same community.
Yeah.
And we're very proud of that. And last year I had Carolyn and Dan come in.
Okay.
And then this year, next month, I'm going to have Mathuri and Vanessa come in.
Awesome.
And talk about their entire year. But what interested me about you is not only the community work that you do and the rest of your family of Aquatennial people. And my wife said, hey, there's a guy that's now the captain of the Minneapolis Aquatennial, and he knows Dale Finger.
Yeah. I do know Dale. So it's a, you know, it's such a small world, Wayne. I work with the YMCA of the Greater Twin Cities on the mission advancement staff, so I assist with our fundraising efforts. But prior to that, I was a consultant at Key Cadillac in Edina, Minnesota. And one day Dale came in and he had the QB Club license plate. And I was like, man, I see that license plate, you know, throughout the city in Minneapolis. And he came in and he was, you know, shopping for a pre-owned Escalade, and we were able to get them outfitted in one. And so that's my connection with Dale, and I think we might be going to the quarterback club for some lunch after
this.
Did
I promise you that?
Well,
we can do that. We can do that.
And it got me down here.
Well, okay. And I didn't tell Dale yet. I was going to surprise him, and I haven't told him yet. So perhaps we can have some friends of Dale's say, be down there after 11 o'clock, say hello to Quentin, all right?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Sound like
that'd
a plan.
Awesome.
So that was, let's see, I'm trying to, so Saturday was, Friday, my wife, took the ambassadors to Cambridge.
Oh, okay.
For their coronation.
I see.
And then Saturday was St. Louis Park and then Farmington. Now, years before the float, I think this is the second season with the float, I used to drive my convertible.
I see.
And we went to St. Louis Park mid-morning. Then we went to Farmington mid-evening. Then we went to Faribault evening.
Wow.
And, I mean, it was a very busy day.
Oh, yeah.
But now this year she didn't go to Faribault. I went to Faribault, and I ride with the Rice County Sheriff's Department Motorcycle Division.
I see.
So I go down there and escort the American flag, along with several other guys on trikes.
Nice.
And motorcycles. Troy Dunn admitted, Troy Dunn is our sheriff.
Okay.
And he's got a Harley outfitted like a cop's you wouldn't believe it. I mean, the lights and the sirens and the stuff he's got on there.
Yeah.
Well, the motorcycle patrol consists mostly of trikes, three wheels, and then a couple of other motorcycles. But anyhow, I was following him. We go side by side. He's in the front by himself. And I just take my hand off the throttle and let out the clutch, and she just creeps along nice and slow, pull in the clutch, and she rolls to a stop.
Nice.
And finally, Troy Dunn, our sheriff, said to me after the parade Saturday night, I wish I could ride a trike.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why don't you get one? You know, because on a bike, he has to stop and start, and stop and start, put out the feet, try to wave at the kids that are enthralled with all the lights and flashings. And he said, well, I can't. I got this outfitted pretty nice. Okay. So then that was Friday night. She's gone with the ambassadors. Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. And I'm gone in the evening. And then yesterday she went to Winona.
Oh.
That's a ways.
Home of the Wildcats.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
Okay. I just know it as there was a guy that owned a radio station there by the name of Rob Hurd. And when I first got involved with the Broadcasters Association and ultimately became president of the association, he was one of those guys that helped the rookie out. I mean, I was in awe of, like, wow, that guy owns a radio station, you know, yeah. in Winona, which is a pretty good-sized market.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys can be, you know, like, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, look at me. I'm having fun. And many years ago, when the Vikings were playing at Old Met Stadium, I ran into him there, and he was the nicest guy. And anyhow, his trick of the trade, he's deceased now, mm-hmm. was on his radio station that he owned in Winona, which was a good-sized market. Anybody that's my age or older, or maybe a little younger, remember that on the 4th of July, he would broadcast live the fireworks.
Oh, wow.
On radio.
No.
We're not talking music. We're yeah. talking about play-by-play. And it rumor has it that he used to... you know, hang with some pals just before going on the air.
I say,
oh, no, yeah. No, he was a purple one. That's a beauty. You know. So, anyhow, she went to Winona yesterday, which is a pretty good size celebration.
Yeah.
So, let's see. The first couple of things I wanted to talk about was your role in the Minneapolis Aquitennial.
Yeah.
And your association with... Dale Finger,
yeah.
And we'll do that a little bit. What role is the captain? Is that automatic succession to Commodore?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily, but there, you know, it's with our family, you've got the Commodore, so Bill McCreevy, and then Kenny Devine and myself are the two captains. And so all three of us, what we do is we make sure that the girls get to their events on time. We handle any logistical planning. So, you know, I mean, as far as, you know, what time we're going to arrive, if we're going to arrive at a midpoint and then drive together to a certain location, all the way down to how we're going to walk on stage, how we're going to exit stage, who's going to talk first, what we're going to talk about. So it's a pretty cool role in that sense when you talk about kind of the logistics. But, you know, really we're there to assist these girls throughout this year. Provide mentorship and just make sure that they're the best that they can be, you know, before and after this experience. And so it's a phenomenal role.
You've heard the name Gretchen Carlson. She was a Miss Minnesota
Okay.
who went on to be Miss America.
Oh, wow.
And now she sued Fox News, I think, got uh-huh. $2 million for sexual harassment, and now she is in charge of the Miss America pageant.
I see.
And for those that aren't aware of it, it is a franchise. In other words, your hometown community can ask to be representing the Miss America pageant with the pageant in their community.
I see.
And then that winner goes up to the Minnesota level, mm-hmm. and then Miss Minnesota goes on to Miss America.
Mm-hmm.
And she just recently announced that they're going to remove the bathing suit competition.
I see.
And it's kind of an interesting conversation that people are having about that, for mm-hmm. or against. And I like people to know that our ambassador program here in Northfield has nothing to do with bathing suits at all.
Correct.
It's all about career. It's all about poise, personality, mm-hmm. and networking and scholarship money.
Yeah, correct. And, I, you know, the Aquitennial Ambassador Organization, same way, Wayne. And so, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, after this experience that these women continue to grow. And the whole goal is for them to achieve exceptional futures. So whatever that is, whatever they're thinking about doing, we want to provide them opportunities to network. We want to provide them opportunities to build their resumes and ultimately achieve whatever it is that they want through life. And so, you know, it's... You know, it's one of those things where it's all about empowering women. And so, you know, I don't think necessarily a bathing suit is going to do that. But the people you meet, the connections you make, the friendships, the memories, those are the things that will do that.
And to represent your own community with mm-hmm. pride, like, for example, Ms. Gonzalez will suggest that I'm from Northfield, the defeated Jesse James Day community, and mm-hmm. representing the Aquitennial now. I mean, the Aquitennial doesn't forbid them for saying where they're from and what program they were involved in. So it's good for the community.
Yes, yes. Every time we introduce the girls, we always start off by saying the community that they're from. So we always want to put an emphasis on that because we know that that's important and people take pride in their communities, and we want to make sure that we show it off as much as possible.
Now, I heard the word when I was probably 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I was going to St. Thomas Military Academy. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was Military Academy. And I heard the word, pay attention, do your homework, get into the, I boarded, get your weekend pass, get back on time, shine your shoes, shine your brass, be sure your shirt is ironed up. And the whole bottom line was, they're talking about networking, how mm-hmm. important that is. And I had no clue what they meant. The network to me was ABC, CBS,
yeah.
Mutual. And that opportunity provided the Queen of the Lakes in regards to networking is unbelievable. They meet giants of the industries throughout Minnesota. Canada, you went to,
yeah.
And Rose Bowl. I don't know if you went to the Rose Bowl.
I did not, but I mean, there's so many places we travel to, and so you know, again, we talked about you know how small our world can be sometimes in regards to the people that you meet and the circles that you become intertwined with, and so yeah, it's I mean, you know, networking is all about connecting with individuals and. You know, sometimes you can help them, sometimes they can help you, and sometimes it's reciprocal. So it's all about building those relationships and continuing to foster those into the future and, just becoming the best person you can be.
19 minutes after 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, my guest this morning is Quentin Moore, and he has a very interesting job right now. We'll be talking all about that, but we're going to talk about something you are familiar with, and that is this time, I get to talk about the quarterback club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield.
Yeah.
Your friend Dale Finger.
Oh, yeah.
And have you ever eaten there?
So, you know, I haven't eaten at the quarterback club, but once Dale agreed to purchase the vehicle from me, he came back and brought a full slab of ribs.
Oh,
that
yeah.
were just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so I did have a taste of what the quarterback club has to offer, and they were really delicious.
Yep, and they're the most expensive thing on the menu. But at the same time, they're a lot cheaper than they are other restaurants.
Yeah.
And right now they're serving breakfast. They serve breakfast right up until 10 o'clock, Monday through Saturday. And anything you want, from a cup of coffee to a donut, or you can ask for the bacon and eggs and hash browns and toast and waffles, and I could go on and on. Locally owned, locally managed. We're talking about the QB, the quarterback club in Northfield for 50 years. How about that? Well, my guest once again is Quentin Moore. And, Quentin, some of the things that you get to do as a captain is do the escorting part.
Mm-hmm.
But you also can, you're a young man, you also can network yourself.
Most definitely. It's been, you know, that's been one of the great opportunities with the Aquatinium Ambassador Organization. Like we said earlier, the individuals that you meet, the people that you're able to interface with, I've already made tremendous connections through this program, and my year is not even finished, you know what I mean? And so those are connections that will continue to blossom into friendships in the future, and it's just a great opportunity, and I'm so thankful and so blessed to have been able to have this role.
How does it feel to be 13 years out of high school?
You know, it feels good. I still have a very youthful spirit, and so you know when I think about it I'm like, wow, it's been that long. But you know, even those memories and those friendships are still with me today, and so it doesn't feel like it's so far in the past. But yeah, you know, just continuous growth, and you know, trying to be the best person I can be.
I normally will play the bumper music of the top 10 tunes from the year a person got out of high school.
Oh,
and
I see.
It brings back good memories, and some guys don't know any of the songs like I do. But for years, 2005, I don't have radio edit copies.
Oh, I see.
So I'd be afraid to play a song from 2005.
I'm sure you can find some good ones. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Well,
but
the
sure
truth be some. Told, I only go up to 2002. Time really flies, I'll tell you. 923 on 1080 Radio. And talk about, let's start off with your life, all right?
Yeah.
And this is all about where you were born, mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, siblings, and career moves, high school activities, and we just get real personal here.
Yeah.
And I can read body language, and not that I have to, but I don't go anywhere somebody doesn't want to go.
I understand.
And,
I understand.
And sometimes I do, but not very often. I've got great stories about that. But
yeah.
It's just a lot of fun. Somebody says to me one time, I've had over 1,500 different people sit where you're sitting right
wow.
now. And I cannot remember everybody all the time.
Yep.
But once they give me a name, and then they give me like what their occupation was or is,
yeah.
or a war they were in, then I can go, oh, yeah, you're the one that.
Yeah.
But so let's start off with this question, and that is, where were you raised? Where were you born?
Yeah, so I was actually born in Chicago, Illinois.
Okay.
And we moved to Minnesota in 1991, so I was 4 years old.
Okay.
When my parents moved up here. At that time, we moved to South Minneapolis, but I grew up on the north side of Minneapolis, and then in high school, we moved to Northeast. I'm a De La Salle High School graduate. And then
they used to kick our butt in football all the time.
Oh, yeah. It, you know, phenomenal school, both, you know, athletically and academically. I feel it's one of the best high schools in Minneapolis or in our state,
well,
really.
It's not really in any city. It's in down an island.
Yeah. Yeah, down on Nicollet Island, which is very unique. It's a really cool location. So grew up in Minneapolis, spent 4 years at De La Salle, and then I finished undergrad.
We'll get there.
Okay, at the
University. You have siblings.
I do have siblings.
Who's the oldest in your family?
I am the oldest.
Okay, then after you?
It's my brother, Emerald.
How much, Emerald, my hand's shaking, but I write these down. How much younger is he than you?
Emerald is a year and a half younger than me.
Oh, that's
so we're close.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're close.
And does he have a nickname? Emmy or?
We just call him E.
E.
Yep.
E.
They call me Q. We call him E. And then I've got a little sister. Her name is Lavina. L-A-V-I-N-A.
Lavina. Z as in zebra?
Nope. Lavina.
Lavina. Okay.
Yep.
Lavina. That's a pretty name.
Yeah. And she is 6 years younger than me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So big brothers watched after her?
Yes, most definitely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's big E. And being a year and a half apart, did you play the role of big brother, or did you guys fight constantly?
You know, we did not fight too much. You know, I think all siblings have little quarrels, which, you know, takes place. But Emerald and I are extremely close. He is somebody that I find significant inspiration from, and he motivates me to be a better brother and just a better person. And so, you know, we grew up close. Unfortunately, our mother, she battled breast cancer and passed away when I was 18 and he was 17. And so we've always stayed tight, even with my little sister, obviously. So we're a close-knit group. We are really a close-knit group, and we look out for each other and try to help each other as much as possible and just continue to provide inspiration and motivation for each other.
So if you were born in Chicago and moved away when you were 4 years old, and family is important, where were your grandparents? So let's start with your dad's side.
Yeah, so my father was actually a lot older than my mother, so I only met my father's parents one time before they passed away. I actually never met my mother's father, but my grandmother, my mom's mom, she's still alive, and she lives in Chicago.
And so you can't go back on heritage any further than that because they were so much older?
Correct, as of right now. But that's something that I plan on doing is, you know, kind of digging into that a little bit more, just to, you know, find out a little bit more about my family and heritage and all those things.
Little DNA.
Yeah.
Send for yours right now, only $39.95.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big push right now. Yeah.
That's something I think that is becoming, well, I know that it's over the years has become important to individuals to just find out what their background is. And just like, for example, I have a sister that's a year and 3 months older than me.
I see.
And we were talking about, you know, I wonder if we can believe everything we were told.
Yeah.
And she said, well, they have this thing here, and I think it costs $99. And I said, well, why don't you send yours in, and I'll give you $50.
Yeah.
She says, why don't you send it in, and I'll give you $50. Because I don't work the computer, that's why. Yeah. So anyhow, my paternal grandmother was from Ireland.
Oh, okay.
That one I got for sure.
Nice.
And then the grandfather on my dad's side, I'm told he's Dutch English or whatever. And then on my mother's side, they're French Canadian.
I see.
With a little Sioux Indian.
I see.
Got to have that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it'd be fun to send it in. I know that they just come back to European.
That's yeah.
So that's unfortunate because grandparents are a great thing to celebrate holidays with and all that. And,
most definitely.
So when did you become aware of your buddies, your playmates, had grandmas, you'd go to grandpa's house, wherever?
Well, when I was young, you know, I knew folks would go visit their grandparents, and, you know, whether it was, you know, hanging out for a weekend or going to the cabin with them or taking trips. So, yeah, it was, you know, just something that other individuals have the luxury of. I really don't, but...
You didn't get those Christmas presents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
then,
all right.
Then, of course, now with divorce so prominent, you know, kids, they have this set of grandparents, that set of grandparents, that set of grandparents, that set of grandparents. You know, get eight, you know, or four gifts instead of two.
Yeah.
So, and then so your dad, what did your dad do in Chicago while you and E were born?
Yeah, so my biological father, he was... he worked for a paper company. Mm-hmm. I don't really recall. But I was actually raised by my stepfather. Him and my mother got together while we were still in Chicago, and we all actually moved to Minnesota.
Okay. Were you able to keep contact with your biological father?
Off and on. It wasn't, he would always, you know, call during the holidays and during birthdays. Really didn't get to see him much, but we stayed in contact.
Is that a traumatic, or is that just like, well, okay, he's not here, and this guy here is here, and he's teaching me things?
Yeah, so, you know, I've always kind of, I'm a roll with the punches type of guy. And so even growing up, you know, though my mother and father weren't together, I know that, you know, he had love and care for us, but he just wasn't the best man to my mother, and she deserved somebody better, and Arthur provided that. And so, you know, it's one of those things where you look back and you say, you know, maybe it could have been different, but I've been blessed with tremendous individuals in my life, including, you know, my mother and stepfather, and they've taken great care of all three of us. They've shown us how to be disciplined, how to, you know, achieve goals, and I'm just very thankful.
Is Lavina Arthur's child?
Correct. Yep.
Okay, so all of you are full brother and sister.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's 9:31. Got to take a break. We'll be back with more on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Captain Quentin Moore, captain of the Minneapolis Aquitennial. And now this important timeout.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Take a short drive to Delicious to the Fireside Lounge and Supper Club in Denison. The Fireside is just a short 10-minute drive from Northfield. Wednesday is Rib and Wing Wednesday. Choose 6 or 12 of Fireside's jumbo wings and your choice of sauces. Plus, beginning at 4 p.m., you can enjoy the Fireside's fall-off-the-bone barbecue ribs, served with your choice of potato and sides at a special Wednesday price. The Fireside now opens at 11 a.m. Wednesday through Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. for breakfast. Take this short drive to Delicious and enjoy ribs and wings today at the Fireside Lounge and Supper Club in Denison.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair. Broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Northfield, Minnesota, the home of Kyle's Colleges and Contentment. And my guest this morning is Quentin Moore. Quentin Moore, are you living in Minneapolis now?
Yeah, so my wife and I, we live in the Standish-Erickson neighborhood, which is South Minneapolis, right off about 38th and Hiawatha.
Is that anywhere near Lake Nokomis?
Correct. Yeah, Lake Nokomis is about five blocks south of me.
You're between the lake and the freeway?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's down around 42nd?
So we're on 38th. So, yeah, with the so you've got, Cedar that runs, north-south. And so you got Lake Nokomis. And actually, Lake Hiawatha is closer to me. So Lake Hiawatha, Lake Nokomis, and then you hit Cedar in 62.
Is that how you came down here today?
Yep, took Cedar all the way.
Okay.
35E.
When did you... 35E?
Yep, so Cedar turns into 77th, and then you take that to 35E, and then 35E turns into 35W South, and then you just cruise on there until... Oh, what was it? Highway...
30?
19. Yeah, 90, maybe. I don't know after that. Siri helped me out a little bit.
It was called Exit 69.
Okay.
And there was a band that was started by some of the Carleton kids over here. And I was seeing the billboards that we'd hang up in our window, and they'd say music by Exit 69. And
I see.
A dumb name. And then one day I'm driving around and go, there's where they got that. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you actually can actually drive Cedar all the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, it gets a little 90-degree turns here and there, but you can take Cedar all the way.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
And if you're in a hurry, sometimes I think the freeway might be a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Well, Quentin, we talked about the fact that your dad moved from the family from Chicago. And how long, once again, as I say, don't share if you don't want to, how long did your mother suffer from breast cancer?
So, she battled breast cancer for about 12 years, and then the final two, my sophomore year, we learned she was diagnosed terminally with breast cancer, and then she passed away my senior year of high school.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Does the cancer kill you because it's in the breast, or does it metastasize, where that word is, and spread throughout the body?
I believe it spreads throughout the body, but I am no expert, Wayne, so I would definitely lean on somebody in the field to probably answer that more accurately. But she was she was a warrior. She fought, very hard, and no matter what, she always, she always made sure that us as her kids were, loved and cared for it. And one person who stepped up tremendously in her absence was my auntie Brenda, who was the only aunt. So my mother, she is one of six, and she had all sisters. So, and my aunt Brenda, she moved up here to Minnesota shortly after we moved with her two kids. And so she's been the glue to keep us together throughout these years after the absence of my mother. And so I'm forever thankful for her.
That's the way I think one of your heroes' mom died, Larry Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but one of the finest wide receivers
ever.
Except that I like Chris Carter better. And I got to give it to that other guy. he really fooled me, Randy Moss, when he started broadcasting. I was surprised he did such a good job.
Yeah.
But I like Carter.
Yeah, I would say, I enjoyed Chris Carter. Obviously, Larry Fitzgerald, his work ethic and discipline is tremendous. But when you talk about somebody who just came in and transformed the game, I know my favorite wide receiver is Randy Moss. That guy was just phenomenal.
Freak.
Phenomenal. Yeah. Yep.
So your auntie came up and helped. Now, was your mom bedridden for months, years?
For those last 2 years, she was pretty much in and out of hospice care. So she moved around probably to two to three different, you know, hospice homes. But yeah, it was that was a tough time, obviously, to see your hero in such dire straits, if you will. But you know, being the oldest, I just tried to keep my, you know, little sister and brother in the best spirits as possible. And again, you know, life is you know, it throws many things at you, and we all have different experiences. We all have different upbringings, and it makes us who we are today. And so that's, you know, that's part of my story.
And I can't imagine how difficult it is to have a lingering illness like that, mm-hmm. and, you know, getting hopeful and then having to tend to them, all their needs and all that. And it's almost, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it's almost like I'm glad she met her maker, because the suffering has just had been too much for her.
Yeah, and, you know, my mother was a active person. She, you know, she was up in the morning singing to wake us up and all these things. And so when you see kind of that energy, you know, starting to leave, you know, the physical body, you really realize that they are ready to, you know, cross over to the other side, if you will. And so when you think about the pain and, you know, all those things, and not only just physically but also, you know, mentally, where you're at in that type of capacity, you just, I'm sure it's for the better.
Yeah, especially for the victim. That you know that in their head and in their heart, they're saying, I wish I wasn't here doing this right now, because they deserve better and I should. And I've heard stories and even witnessed it about, you know, it's okay now. You can let go.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember telling that to an uncle, and within 24 hours he was dead.
Yeah. Yep.
Fortunately, because he was really hurting.
Yeah.
It's 20 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Quentin Moore, my guest, he is a member of the Aquatennial, and we're shooting the fat, chewing the fat, I guess you would say. What business was your dad in?
So
Your stepfather.
So Art was a musician. So he played trumpet for Big Walter Smith and the Groove Merchants way back when. He was also involved in a lot of other organizations in regards to youth and like drill teams. So we grew up playing drums and bugles. We had a drum and bugle corps, Old Fourth Avenue South. Drill team, and we were always the youngest kids at the competitions, but he taught us a lot. So he was a musician, you know, by trade, if you will. He went to school for it, but he kept, you know, little odd jobs throughout that time, because obviously, you know, as an artist, it's, you know, it's not always your main money maker, but, you know, you got to keep some other money coming in. So
I have a lot of artists on my show.
Yeah.
And their first love is their music, and then their second love is to, you know, put food in their mouth.
Exactly.
You just mentioned something that is near and dear to my heart, and that's a drum and bugle corps competition.
Oh, okay.
And we used to have some here, and we even started a drum and bugle corps called the James Gang.
Okay.
And it was such an enjoyable part of a weekend.
Yeah.
And now the ones that you're mentioning, you weren't part of the organization that you know, takes care of the competition and makes up the rules and puts up the contest, like I say.
Yeah.
You were just a neighborhood, when I say just.
No, we were a neighborhood drum and bugle corp, and so.
So how big were you?
Oh, so we were, man, I can actually think of the drummers we had. So it was myself, Emerald, Dontrell, Elgin, Demetrius. So those were probably the first five drummers that started off, and then my little sister, and then it was probably like four or five other younger girls who would,
as flag girls, or
yeah, they would be baton.
Yeah,
they would twirl the baton,
keeping the rhythm.
Yeah. So we had the baton twirlers, and then we had a couple other younger kids who played bugle, you know, as best as possible at that time. So literally, we started when we were, oh man. I think I was 8, Emerald was 7, and Lavina was, I mean, obviously she wasn't 2 years old out there, but she would, you know, hang on the arts hand and walk through parades with us, so yeah.
Were they, like, neighborhood parades? They weren't like the Aquitennial or
no,
the St. Paul Carnival?
No, they were neighborhood parades, so, you know, we participated in, like, Rondo Days and St. Paul, Juneteenth.
There's another connection.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I used to be a bill collector. I thought I was a loan officer when I took the job, and then they said, you're going outside, and I actually walked into a pool hall on Rondo, and I think it was either Dale or Western.
Okay.
And that's before the freeway went through.
Yeah,
Rondo. And I walked into this pool hall, and you could hear a pin drop. Like, who the hell are you?
Yeah.
Hey, is George Smith here? you must have been the darlings of the parade. I mean, being that young and playing drums.
Oh, man, we were so young. And you know what was so funny? I can remember this experience going to Rondo Days. And, you know, we're the first real team out there. And we've got on, like, these all-white, they weren't sweatsuits, but, like, the windbreaker material.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're pounding away on our drums. And then everybody else that came after us. So we probably was, like, 12 deep at that time. Everybody else that came after us had, like, 50 to 100 people, and just, you know, the sounds. But, you know, it taught me a lot at a very early age on how to be disciplined, how to be prep, how to be in step with your, you know, other team members. And so it just really,
oh, it's great discipline.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
To this day, I wonder how the heck when they perform. I mean, the big core, when they perform on field during the competition we used to have here, is that. That they're playing their music and they're counting their steps.
Yes.
And they're moving sideways, forwards, and backwards and making these things. And the flag girls are fantastic.
Yeah.
And then Channel 2 used to broadcast these competitions.
Uh-huh.
And I would just go nuts watching it, because who cares about the guy with the horn up close with his cheeks puffed out? I want to see the formation. I want to
exactly.
see the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing something that's just picturesque.
Yeah.
And then they'll show a guy doing the cymbals. Come on.
You know, so one cool experience with the Aquitania Ambassador Organization, we were able to go down to San Antonio for their Fiesta celebration, and they had a huge battle of the bands, which is like 4,200, you know, freshmen to senior high school students. And like you said, those formations that they make, and then to see them all perform together at the end, you know what I mean? Like, to bring those horns and that percussion, it was just like,
I'm getting goose pimples right now. I mean, it's just so cool.
It
you
is.
Know? Man, I used to announce the competition, and it was always, you didn't ad lib.
Yeah.
Minneapolis Brass, Minnesota Brass,
uh-huh.
Probably the longest lasting one. Minnesota Brass, are you ready?
Yeah.
Minnesota Brass, you may take the field for competition.
Yep.
And I just loved it, but it's so expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't blame. Like, we had the Winona University band up here last year for our parade. Well, it cost a ton of money.
Yeah.
But you got 2-3 buses and a truck and all those kids.
Yep.
And you got to pay for the gas. You got to pay for the bus drivers. You got to pay for lunch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's why I think it's pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. But, boy, it's worth it.
It is.
I think Stillwater used to have one every year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And Austin used to, when I was working down in Austin. That was funny. I had a press pass, and I could go walk amongst them. You know, it was pretty cool.
Nice.
We're talking to Quentin Moore right now. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this important timeout on the Wayne Eddy Affair.
The genuine enthusiasm for helping people get fit is palpable at CrossFit Scopos in Dundas. Every coach brings their expertise along with their desire to help you be the best you you can be. This is Terry Knight, and I've worked out in a lot of gyms and on my own, but the atmosphere provided at CrossFit Scopos in Dundas is nothing like I've ever experienced. I'm challenged and lifted up. I hope you'll take a moment to check them out and let Scopos help you change your life. Go to CrossFitScopos.com.
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25 plus employees and they all work every hour they're open. So you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service. And getting parts, well, there's so much experience behind the parts counter, you'll be amazed. Our motto is we sell fun, but every day our mission is to help you from finding parts, getting service, or shopping for something new and fun too. Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
12 minutes before 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio from our studios in downtown Northfield, Minnesota. My guest this morning, Quentin Moore. Quentin, did Arthur play brass, or was he into drumming, or both?
Trumpet player.
Okay.
Yeah, but he could, you know, he played trumpet, but he'd do percussion as well and play a little piano. So he could do a little bit of everything.
Did he ever play at the Dakota Jazz Room?
You know, I'm pretty sure he did. I would imagine so. I know we would go to Duluth for like the Blues Fest. He'd play there. But I don't know. I don't know if Big Walter and those guys ever played at the Dakota Jazz Club at that time, at least. But yeah.
Well, so let's get on to grade school. Where did you go to grade school?
So I kind of bounced around for grade school. So I went to Ascension over in North Minneapolis, mm-hmm. kindergarten, first grade, and then I went to a school called St. Bridget's that was over in North Minneapolis, and then I went to Lincoln Elementary, and then I went to Sacred Heart for 2 years, which is in Robbinsdale, and then I went back to Ascension for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So grade school was a collage of other schools, but Ascension mainly is where I spent most of my schooling.
I went to Public School 31. St. John's in Little Canada, Immaculate Heart of Mary in Indianapolis, Blessed Sacrament in St. Paul, Sacred Heart in St. Paul, St. Matthew's in St. Paul.
Mm.
That was my...
I see.
So we we have a... This is like the third thing we have in common.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's fun to just talk to people because it's amazing how, you know, there's always a connection one way or the other.
Yes.
And so moving back and forth like that, and then also mm-hmm. in the street parade that you had as a neighborhood kid, no?
Yeah.
Did you settle in then in middle school or ninth grade through? You graduated from De La Salle.
Mm-hmm.
How many years did you go to De La
Salle? I was there all 4 years.
Okay, so yeah. Did you go there on scholarship?
So our family, we weren't, you know, well off. So I had a scholarship at D, and then also received an academic scholarship for the University of St. Thomas as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
Minneapolis City Scholarship.
Did Hill Murray or did any of the other Catholic high schools try to recruit you? Because they can.
No, not at that time. You know, it was so, it's funny because most of, I would say my close friends I've all known since Ascension. So I've got a friend who I met in kindergarten. Her name is Agnes. I'm still friends with her. My buddy Tercel, I met him in third grade. He ended up going to Ascension with me after a while. And then my buddy Corey, I've known since, what, sixth grade. So met them all at Ascension. We all ended up going to De La Salle together besides my buddy Tercel. But, no other schools recruited me, but Corey and I were same age. So we were actually looking at De La Salle and Totino Grace. But Totino okay. Grace was just a little further out for us.
Okay, now, once again, folks, Quentin is sitting here with a short sleeve shirt on. He's built like a brick. Have you ever heard that expression?
More recently, I've been in the gym, you know, trying to, got to stay active.
The owners of the radio station, Jeff Johnson and his wife, Terry Knight, have just joined CrossFit.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's intense.
Yeah, they had just joined and maybe been there once, maybe twice, and I came in one morning and said, man, you look really buff. But a guy my age should get in some exercise of some sort, whether it's yoga or CrossFit or self-determination. Mm-hmm. So did you play in any of those grade schools? Did they have little leagues that they played baseball, football, soccer, whatever, in grade school?
Yeah, so and so
like Nativity was our... They were the bad guys.
Yeah. So we played Nativity a few times in some tournaments. So at Ascension, we started, so let's say sixth grade, when I came back to Ascension, I played basketball, baseball, and soccer. So those are the three sports that I played all through grade school. And then in high school, I played football, basketball, all 4 years, and then my senior year, I threw shot put.
Okay.
So.
Well, I like to talk about the athletic experiences people have had. For example, I'm going to take a break, but I'll give you 30 seconds, and I know you'll come up with it, okay?
Yeah.
I want you to think football, okay? Grade school, high school, doesn't matter. Think football and tell me what play that you'll never forget.
Oh, okay.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
You know, when I asked that question, Quentin, I just love to see the smile on people's faces. First, it kind of goes like, what kind of a question is that? Oh, and then you can just see their eyes light up, and it's either funny or it's really exciting. But, you know, how many people come up to you and say, hey, what play you'll never forget?
Yeah.
And it's fun to remember.
Yeah.
So tell me, if you will, what is it in football?
Oh, man. So this may come off as embarrassing, but so I didn't start playing football until I was a ninth grader. Okay. And so I remember in ninth grade, we were at Benilde St. Margaret, and this was probably, it was like garbage time, and they had thrown me in at free safety. Right. And so in ninth grade, I was a skinny kid. So I'm at free safety. And it's actually two plays, because this made me more determined to work hard at football, because I wouldn't have come out if it wasn't for my friend Cedric, who he was like, hey, we're going to go play football. And I was like, all right, you know, but it really wasn't like something I was passionate about. So I'm back there at free safety, and literally the ball comes to me, like the quarterback throws up this duck and I drop it, right? And everybody's like, oh my gosh. And that time, you know, I went up with, one hand and tried to get it, but... And so literally the very next play, the same thing happens, and I drop that one too. So that's how my football career started. And so, but what those two, so that happened, and what it instilled in me was like, hey man, if you really want to be, you know, good at this, you got to put in the work. You know what I mean? And so, it just showed me that, no matter where you start at, you know, you can get better. And so after that, I was determined to, you know, be in the gym, lift weights, obviously work on my hands, conditioning, all those things. And so those are the two plays I remember, because those two plays kind of set up my trajectory, if you will, to excel at all sports that I
Well, what was that one play you'll never forget in football, other than missing it?
Yeah. Well, I would say...
You're trying to be Randy Moss, grabbing it, you know, one-handed.
I would say it was probably my first touchdown as a freshman. And so we had a coach by the name of Ray Holton, and I played tight end on the offensive side of the ball. And so... we used to play our games actually. This was before De La Salle actually had a home field, which came about in 2009, I believe. But the first play, the first touchdown I ever caught, it was a flag route thrown by my buddy Corey, freshman year at high school. I forget against what team, but he used to always get on me in practice because instead of running a flag route, I would actually just run a streak. And so Ray was always like, run the route. And I ran the route and sure enough caught a touchdown, and that was a pretty happy day.
Well, good.
Yeah.
And you also played soccer and what did you say, basketball?
Yeah.
Well, you're a big guy. How tall are you?
About 6'4".
Yeah, you're mm-hmm. a big guy.
Yeah.
Okay, but that may be small to De La Salle standards. I don't know.
Yeah, so at De La Salle, when I played basketball, I was the five, so I was our center for the most part. There were a lot of guys a lot taller than me. But one thing we did, we fronted the post, so being able to move around those bigger guys and stay in front of them was the object on defense. You know what I mean? And so, being smaller, a little more fleet of foot, if you will, actually helped me in that situation. So, yeah, I was the post when I played.
What one play do you remember in basketball? A buzzer shot or a free throw or something?
Yeah, so there was we were playing I forget where the team was from. But one play I always remember is we were down. I think the game was in overtime. But, I think they were from New Orleans or somewhere, Louisiana. And, really good team, really hyped up. And so Coach Thorson, he's no longer there, but he was the De La Salle coach for a long time. He would always schedule some very tough non-conference games to get us ready for the postseason in Minnesota. And so we played this team, and we were in overtime, going back and forth, and literally it came down to a last shot. And so what happened was we're playing, we've got the ball, somebody puts the shot up, misses it, I get the rebound with about probably 4 seconds left, right, offensive rebound, I look to the right of me and I see my buddy Lavelle Jackson in the corner, I kick it to him, and he knocks down a three-pointer at the buzzer, wins the game. I mean, everybody rushes the floor, and it was one of those moments that you never forget.
Now, if you would have shot that, you would have tied the game?
Correct. Yep. Oh. Yep. So
that wasn't being selfish.
No, he was wide open.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I had a guy who I was battling for the rebound, so it was like, all right, get it, kick it out. He knocked it down from the corner, and, yeah, everybody went crazy.
Great,
it was
memories.
Really cool. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was
and then
cool.
Your senior, what was your best shot put?
Oh, man, so senior year shot put, so it was my first year ever throwing shot put.
Why don't you save that story after the news?
Okay, that sounds good.
I shouldn't have asked in the first place until after the news.
That sounds good.
My guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair, Quentin Moore. Quentin is associated with the YMCA, and he's also a captain for the Minneapolis Aquitennial Ambassador Program. And we'll have more from him right after this important time out for the news on your radio station, 1080 on your AM dial, KYMN 95.1 FM, The One.
Immigration uncertainties trump steadfast. I'm John Trout. Undocumented immigrant parents at the U.S.-Mexico border being separated from their children face a list of possible legal outcomes. Correspondent Diane Gallagher.
Since they're going to court, these parents, because they're all being charged, they're going to federal court, they could get time served and then be reunited with their children in a couple of hours or a couple of days, or they could spend up to 6 months in jail for a misdemeanor or even longer if it's a reentry felony.
President Trump remains firm.
He's tweeted, "Why don't the Democrats give us the votes to fix the world's worst immigration laws? Where is the outcry for the killings and crime being caused by gangs and thugs, including MS-13, coming into our country illegally?" That's a different tack from the president's weekend tweet suggesting the separations were aimed in part to get Democrats to compromise on money for his border wall and ending certain legal immigration programs. Bob Costantini, Washington.
If you know anyone hooked on endlessly playing video games, they may meet the World Health Organization's definition of the condition recognized as gaming disorder.
The WHO is classifying gaming addiction as a mental health disorder and is adding it to the 11th edition of its International Classification of Diseases. medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta says there are certain symptoms kids exhibit when they've crossed over into a mental disorder.
When you're choosing to play the game instead of other activities which are really important in your life, not going to school, not sleeping, not eating, not having relationships with friends.
But Dr. Gupta says most kids in the U.S. do not have a mental disorder.
I think, you know, when you start to talk about percentages, it may even be in the single-digit percentage.
I'm John Stolness.
Stocks are opening lower as trade tensions with China continue. Concerns about trade tariffs kept the markets in check Friday when President Trump spoke about the U.S. placing a 25% tariff on $50 billion worth of Chinese exports. I'm John Trout.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will he still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
All right, the Beatles and When I'm 64, by the way, Paul McCartney's voice, Paul McCartney's dad on the clarinet, and today is Paul McCartney's 76th birthday. 3 minutes after 10 o'clock, the time, my guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair, Quentin Moore, will continue our conversation after I remind you a person's journey through grief is unique. Each loss is unique. Terry Knight's guest today is local author Donna Mathewitz with her book, A Journal for Your Journey, The Trip Without Regard to the Amount of Time It Takes to Navigate Through Your Loss and Grief. Donna shares her own story of grief, losing her son to gunfire. In her interview, Donna talks about how she chose the thought-provoking questions that guide those who use the journal and what happens to us if we don't process those profound losses. That's at 11 o'clock this morning on 15 with the author, with KYMN's Terry Knight. Once again, we're back to Quentin Moore. And Quentin, I asked you before we took a break for the news about your favorite memory in regards to the shot put.
Yeah, so with the shot put, I was a senior in high school, and my offensive line coach was like, man, you should throw shot put, you know what I mean? And so I saw it on the Olympics, but I had no idea, you know, what it was. And so one of my fondest memories is we were at the section finals, and there were a couple schools who were just always, you know, making it to state. And so that section finals, I threw it 49.5 or something like that, and actually beat out everybody at sections in my first year. Made it to state, and unfortunately just got destroyed once I got to the state competition. I mean, guys were throwing it, I think some guy threw like 62.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was like, okay. But so yeah, you know, making it to state was a fond memory with shot put. So yeah, that's cool.
Are you a runner at all?
You know, not much. I when it comes to my workouts, I lift a little bit. I do a little bit of cardio, but I'm more elliptical machine. I kind of like the, you know, easy impact. I had my knee scoped my senior year after the football season. And so I just try to be kind to it as much as possible.
So tell me about your graduation. Do you recall who the speaker was at the LaSalle?
Oh, you are testing me.
Well, most people don't remember.
Who spoke at our graduation? It wasn't me. I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Okay.
I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Did D. LaSalle have clergy as teachers? Some?
You know, Sister Mary Kay Brooks, and then Brother Michael Collins, he was our president. And then, yeah, Brother Robert Thomas, he was a science teacher. I'm trying to think about who else. I think that might have been it.
Did you have to go to Mass every day?
Not every day, but we did have services. I would say at least twice a month.
How elite is it in regards to population? How many graduated with you from De La Salle?
So I believe in my graduating class, we had about 156 students.
That's a nice, comfortable number.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was a good size. I really enjoyed D because of the diversity that that school had at the time. And just, I mean, you had so many different type of kids, and not just, you know, color of skin, but I'm talking about different socioeconomic statuses just all coming together. And it was one of those places where, I mean, I just thrived in that environment, and it was so cool to, you know, graduate with the class that I did and to see what those individuals are doing right now.
2005. 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, is that a co-ed school?
Correct. Yep. It became co-ed, I believe, in the early 70s.
And what about the prom? Did you go to the prom?
Yes. So junior and senior year, I went to the prom.
Same girl?
Same girl, yes. Yes.
Okay. And what did you get to do as a devout, I can't say devout because I don't know, but
yeah,
assuming you're a devout Catholic.
Yeah.
And nowadays, the senior proms can get pretty crazy.
Yeah.
What did, I remember my senior proms, and what did you guys do?
Well, you know, we had a good time. You know, we danced the night away. We, you know, sipped on lemonade and sodas, and, you know, we just made sure everybody had a good time. It was, you know, our at D, it was I would say a pretty responsible crew for the most part. You know what I mean? I think, you know, everybody, you know, makes mistakes, and, you know, they do things. But we had a good time at our proms. You know, nothing.
Where'd you go? What'd you do?
So 1 year we went to the. So my junior year we were at the Earl Brown Heritage Center in Brooklyn Center.
Yep. Okay.
Which was great. I had an all white suit with a top hat, and then
what did you drive or ride in?
You know what, that's a great question. I don't recall
with your high hat. You can't remember.
I don't know if my girlfriend at that time drove us, because she was driving, she had a car, but yeah, I don't
okay.
remember. And then my senior year we actually had it at the Nicollet Island pavilion across the street, where we had actually the last year Commodore's dinner was held in there. So yeah.
Now, what changes have they made on the island? I know that there were a lot of city council people that were upset that there were like almost opening it up to the public. And their taxes were going to go higher because they made these improvements. And
yeah,
this was in the last 13 years for sure. But
What
do you remember as an alma mater?
Well, you know, one big change is that De La Salle actually has a home field now, like a football field and a, I shouldn't say football field, but a multi-purpose use. So, you know, football games, soccer games, but it is also open up to the city as well. So they can have access to it as well when it's not in use. And so that was a huge change. Something that I think was necessary. You know what I mean? We used to get bussed out to Benilde to play home football games, and soccer matches were held, you know, at different locations. So that's a huge change. Obviously, you know, when you talk about like St. Anthony Main, that road there, you've seen restaurants kind of turn and go. But one thing that stayed the same is the theater is still there. And so I think it's such a vibrant place down there on Nicollet Island. And, you know, some of the homeowners, you know, they had some qualms about, you know, the stadium coming in, and, you know, kids would get hit by the train and all these other things. But it's like, not really, no. You know what I mean? And so it's been nice to go back and hang out on the island and attend a football game and see the kids' joy, you know, coming out of the locker room.
So that happened since you graduated?
Yeah, that happened afterwards.
Okay.
Yep.
But you remember the little battle that was put up?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I remember going down to, you know, city council meetings and park board meetings and having to speak on behalf of the students to say, hey, this is something we need, this is something we want. So yeah, that was a pretty cool experience. And then to see it come to fruition was just spectacular.
And now that it's all said and done, it's enhanced the island.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah. Most definitely.
Okay, so now it's time to go to college. By the way, Quentin Moore is my guest here on KYMN. He's very involved with the YMCA. In addition to that, he sold a car to my good friend and sponsor, Dale Finger, and he's a member of the Aquatennial Ambassador Organization as one of two captains. Mm-hmm. So now it's time to go off to college. Mm-hmm. You weren't going to get a scholarship as a shot putter.
Yeah. No.
And I don't know on a D3 level or a D2 level how your athletic prowess came into play.
Yeah.
Did you get a scholarship to St. Thomas?
Yeah, so I was awarded the Minneapolis City Scholarship. So it's a scholarship that they give to two students in the city of Minneapolis to cover their tuition at whatever school they want to go to. And so so I received that.
What was that based on?
Academics and, involvement, extracurricular activities and things like that.
So who nominated you?
You know, I don't know. I believe it was a scholarship opportunity that I just submitted my name for. I saw that it was an opportunity, and yeah.
Did you get quite a few scholarships?
So, let's see. I know I got the Minneapolis City Scholarship, and I believe I probably got one or two other smaller scholarships, but I worked throughout college, so...
Did you work in high school?
Yes.
What did you do?
Yes. So, in high school, I had a few different jobs. So, my first job ever was with the cookie cart in North Minneapolis when I was 7. But in high school, I worked at it was then Marshall Fields.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in the housewares department. And so, you know, here's this, 16-year-old kid working with, 50-plus-year-old moms and grandmothers who, love pots and pans. And so I had a good time doing that.
Do they train you, take you to class and say copper bottom is this and aluminum is that?
Yeah.
Or did you just wing it?
Yeah, what I realized is that, most individuals came in knowing kind of what they wanted. And you just had to be personable and, provide them a great experience. And so that's what I aim to do.
Okay.
Or I would say that's what I aim to do. And so, it was a really cool experience. You know what I mean? And so, I did that. I did some marketing work at the Twin Stadium, which wasn't the most enjoyable experience, trying to get people to sign up for, not necessarily a mortgage, but to have somebody come assess their home and they get a free T-shirt. And so all those things. And then in college, my work study job was in the financial aid office. So I would assist students and families with the financial aid process, which we know can be tedious and sometimes very difficult. And then I also waited tables and bartended at a restaurant in Minneapolis called J.D. Hoyt's, which is a seafood steakhouse, which is my favorite restaurant in the city. But I've got a soft spot for Hoyt's. I just think it's a phenomenal place. And so, did all those things throughout college, and it assisted me in it taking care of some of that tuition.
So you're wearing a very attractive PC hat. I have not seen this model before.
Oh, really?
It's really cool. And you even have the bill coming out straight forward.
Yeah, I always keep a straight
bill. You know what I
saw
last night on some news program or whatever it was? They were wearing double hats.
Oh, really?
One that's on the side crooked, the other one on, like wings,
I see.
Okay, that's new. I like to tell the joke, and let's see if you get this. Took a bunch of 10-year-old kids to a Twins baseball game. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what do you think so far? And they say, I can't figure out why the guys have their hats on backwards. You get it? Quentin Moore is my guest on KYMN. Quentin, here comes the question I get teased about most. But the people that tease me aren't in the studio and seeing the reflection in the eyes of the individual I asked this question of. Do you remember your first bicycle?
Oh, yes. Well, yes. I remember falling off my first bicycle, and actually I've got a scar to show it, but right here.
I see.
Yeah. So, I don't remember it vividly, like down to the colors or like, you know, the tassels hanging off the handlebars. But I remember driving it down on Wabash in Chicago and falling into the you got your sidewalk and then you got your grass and rolling up on the grass and falling and scraping my elbow and still got the scar to prove it.
So the bike was not a big deal in your life.
The experience was.
Okay. It's see, folks, get a kick out of it. 18 minutes after 10 o'clock. What about, have something in common as you go on to the St. Thomas University campus?
Yeah.
Have you ever spent any time in the library?
Oh, yeah.
What's the name of it?
Ooh, Wayne, you are testing me today.
You don't remember the name of the library at St. Thomas University?
It was just the O'Shaughnessy Library?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of buildings, O'Shaughnessy, over there.
Yeah, there are. And I actually went to school with the one of the grandsons of the original O'Shaughnessy.
Really?
Yeah. It's a very interesting book if you ever want to read about it. I mean, it's a rags to riches story. It's quite fascinating.
I see.
But here's the kicker. My uncle...
Mm-hmm.
Father Clyde, Eddie, was the first librarian at that O'Shaughnessy.
Oh, that's really cool.
And I carried the books from the old library, which was in the basement along the building along Summit Avenue, just before you get to the stadium. And then we had a bunch of cadets and we'd have a board in our hand, and they'd stack books on us and remember who's behind you, remember who's ahead of you.
Yeah.
And walk up the stairs before the elevators were in there. And we'd walk up all those stairs with those books.
Oh, my goodness.
I think we got 50 cents an hour, if I remember, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
In 1956 or whatever it was.
I see.
God, that's a long time ago. Quentin Moore, our guest on Kim. When you went to St. Thomas, did you... have a goal? Did you have a major that you were you thinking athletics at all? What was your thought going into school? You were an academic top 10?
Yeah, so, you know, in regards to athletics, it was something that afforded me an opportunity to connect with my peers and, you know, stay active, but it was never really a passion, but it wasn't something that I saw myself, like, going professionally for. So I always knew that I wanted to finish college, and one thing that I really enjoyed was advertising, and so that was my major. So I majored in advertising with a focus on copywriting, and then I minored in sociology, and so that's...
So you didn't do any sports?
I played football for 2 years.
You did?
Yeah, so
Who was your coach?
Dan Roney.
Okay. Did you play against St. John's?
Oh, yeah.
Did you play against them? You?
Yeah. We didn't do too well against St. John's my 2 years there.
They're getting the upper hand now.
Yeah, you know, Caruso, he's come in and he's done a phenomenal job with that program. Coach Roney, he was a great guy, and so one thing that led to me, you know, the reason I stopped playing football was because of my health. So my knee became worse, you know, at the higher level, and then I also had bursitis in my right shoulder. And I went and saw a PT, and she was like, yeah, you know, you can keep playing, and you'll probably have fun, but if that, you know, bursa sac in your shoulder bursts, you know, you're going to have some painful issues down the road. And so, again, I wasn't going professionally. It wasn't something that I was trying to, you know, take to the next level. So decided to bow out, but stayed active in intramural sports, and a couple friends, Burkett, Buddha, and David Griggs, we started the St. Thomas Purple Gloves Boxing Club back then. And so
Purple Gloves.
Yeah, it's Purple Gloves Boxing Club. And so
who came up with that name? some Viking on the
team? No, I think, you know, we just, it was, Buddha was kind of the brainchild because he was a boxer kind of growing up. And so that's just the name we came up with. We started off with, it was us three and probably two other folks when we started, and we grew the group in 2 years to about 45, 50 participants.
Wow.
So it was a pretty cool group. Not everybody showed up all the time, but,
You box in?
Oh man, we didn't even have weights. It was just kind of a, you know, workout, stay active. We saw a couple fights live, but it wasn't really an opportunity to get in the ring. You know what I mean? Oh. It was more so just to stay active, stay fit. And then, you know, we would spar a little bit.
Are you a boxing fan?
Yes, I do enjoy boxing.
Well, I've had a guy in here that is a boxing coach.
Oh, really?
Yes, and he also is up at St. Olaf College.
Uh-huh.
He is a professor of... they don't pop into my mind like they used to. Excuse me. 23 philosophy. Thank you.
Okay.
23 minutes after 10 o'clock. So here's a guy that's a pugilist and a philosopher.
Yeah.
And he dropped off a book here for me the other day about existentialism or whatever that word is. Uh-huh. And I started reading it, and oh, wow, it's it over my head.
Yeah.
You know, but I thought it's pretty cool that he was a boxing coach, former boxer. So I asked, the point I'm making.
Yeah.
I asked him who his favorite boxers were, and I told him who mine was, besides Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
Who was yours?
Oh, man. So, you know, right now, I would say for entertainment value, I would have to say Floyd Mayweather. Though I don't agree with his style of boxing, I think the way he transform the entertainment aspect of it, you know, I can appreciate that. Style wise though, I like a guy called Triple G, Gennady Golovkin. He's just a tough pound for pound boxer. Earl Spence Jr. is a new guy who is,
what weights are we talking?
Welterweight, middleweight.
Okay.
So Earl Spence Jr., a phenomenal guy. Terrence Crawford, he's from Nebraska. He's undefeated. And so, you know, I think, you know, my buddy Corey would say Mayweather roaring boxing. But I think, you know, you went through this.
Why would you say that?
Well, I think it's just the way his style was. And he did, you know, he...
Would you call it plotting?
Yeah, a little bit. You know what I mean? It's, you know, you fight Manny Pacquiao when he's, you know, well beyond his years. And, you know, anyway. But I think now boxing is starting to see a lot of, like, really good talent come up. And, you know, not necessarily the heavyweight division. And some folks feel like, hey, you got to have, you know, these big-time heavyweights to really drive it, kind of from that top-down approach. But I think when you look at the welterweights and some of those, you know, middleweight.
My favorite one, Sugar Ray Robinson.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Those guys are tough.
And he's intelligent.
Yeah.
That's where I come from in boxing. I'm not that great at it, but
yeah.
I do have to take a break.
For sure.
And we got to get you out of St. Thomas and into the workaday world, and we'll be doing that. Our guest this morning is Quentin Moore, and he is from the Twin Cities, and he is a captain of the Aquitennial Ambassador Organization.
G'day, mate. How you going? Come on over to the Minnesota Zoo and check out our spiffy Aussie exhibit, Kangaroo Crossing. Bring your mates and get up close and personal with the roos, wallabies and emus. Roam the land without any barrier between you and the wildlife. Crikey, it's like we brought over the real outback. Kangaroo Crossing at the Minnesota Zoo. Presented by Think Mutual Bank. Open now through Labor Day. Learn more at mnzoo.org. Celebrating 40 years of amazing.
At Kenyon Hold and Warsaw Mutual, you can get the coverage you need from the people you know, and they will be there when you need them most, because Kenyon Hold and Warsaw Mutual grows trust locally. This is National Dairy Month, and Kenyon Hold and Warsaw Mutual and Grinnell Mutual would like to recognize the hard work of our area dairy farmers. Trust in tomorrow. Contact Kenyon Hold and Warsaw Mutual, your local Grinnell Mutual provider in Wanamingo today. Trust in tomorrow is a registered trademark of Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company.
This is David Lutescher of Grundhoffer & Lutescher, Attorneys at Law. Marv and I, and the best legal staff anywhere, are pleased to introduce you to the newest members of our legal team, Jennifer Nobach. Jennifer grew up in Lonsdale. She was previously a law clerk to several judges and has years of experience in social work. Jennifer joins Marv, me, and Robin Finke. Robin joined us last year. Robin has over two decades of experience, much of it as a trial attorney. And for the curious, yes, Marv still comes in every day.
Well, let me tell you right now, if you know Dale Finger, give him a call and tell him to get over to the restaurant because I'm bringing Quentin Moore with me over to the quarterback club after the program. And, of course, Quentin knows Dale Finger, so that would be fun to have a little reunion with your buddy Dale.
Most definitely.
Point number 97. Let's. We've only got a half hour left approximately, so I'm going to have to speed us through. St. Thomas. Now, did you live on campus your first couple of years and then in a frat house or anything?
No, so I did not join a fraternity, but I did live all 4 years on campus. So first 2 years I was in Brady Hall, and then my last 2 years I was actually, they built some apartments that overlooked the first baseline of the baseball field. And so my buddy David Griggs and I, we were able to score an apartment in that building. And I think we're on the fifth floor, and it was just an amazing view of baseball games and everything. So
I stayed at Ireland Hall.
Okay. Yep. Oh yeah.
And I overlooked the tennis courts.
Do you remember the snowball fights?
Oh gosh. Yes. Well.
Oh yeah.
Quentin, when you went into what you went into, mm-hmm. Say that again. You majored in
advertising, and then minored in sociology.
And thinking that you would do what?
So you know, the thought back then was, you would graduate and then go into the advertising business, you know, an ad agency. And so there were, you know, Campbell Bethune, Olson, a lot of those bigger ad agencies in Minnesota. But unfortunately, at the time when I graduated, a lot of ad agencies were hiring interns at that time, fresh out of college. And just because of my family situation and kind of where we were at, I really needed to start making some money after school.
When you say family situation, are you married at this point?
No. So it was myself, my younger brother Emerald, and Lavina. And so my mom had passed away, and then my stepfather, he had moved on.
Oh,
and so it was just kind of us and my aunt, and had to start making a living.
Okay, so you had to, you know, make sure that he and Lavina got their education.
Yep.
And so what job did you take out of college?
So I actually became an admissions counselor for St. Thomas. And so what was really cool was that I had the experience in the financial aid office as work study. And so it kind of helped me transition into that role as a admissions counselor, because I could really talk about that financial aspect when going out to recruit students. And really speaking with the family and parents, but then obviously I had my experience as an undergrad, so when it came to activities, sports, academics, I could really connect with the students as well.
Did you, were you there when Dave Dernberger was there as a professor?
Ooh, the name?
He was a former senator.
Oh, okay. I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have. He's been on my show many times. Pretty interesting guy.
Yeah.
So you get out of school and you go to work for the University of St. Thomas, St.
Correct.
Thomas University.
Yep.
And I remember when William Mitchell Law was right across the street on Summit Avenue.
Yeah.
And then they moved down to where they're at, and that used to be OLP.
Oh, yeah.
Our Lady of Peace High School for Girls.
Oh, okay.
Which my sister went to.
I see.
All right. So... Bless you, my son. after you did the work for the university, what did you get into?
So after that, I moved on to an organization called Penumbra Theater. It's the largest African-American theater here in the U.S. and just does phenomenal, phenomenal work. And so I worked in development there with Chris Wittes and Emily McPeck. And so we assisted with all the development efforts, fundraising efforts for the theater. And so I was there for a year and a half.
Now, who was music director?
So we didn't have a music director, but we did have a you know what? I shouldn't say that. There might have been a music. It was either, it might have been T. Michael Rambo at the time. I don't know if his exact title was music director, but artistic director was Lou Bellamy, and then his daughter was...
somebody from Northfield was a regular in the band.
Oh, really?
At Penumbra.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not remembering who it was. But, I see. But anyhow, he invited me to go on up and
yeah,
catch a play. I guess they're pretty good.
Yeah, no, they do do a phenomenal job. And
what'd you do after Penumbra?
So let's see, what did I do after Penumbra?
Well, I don't know. You just Cadillacs.
I still, I still waited tables and bartended throughout that whole time.
Oh, that favorite restaurant of yours.
Yeah, so J.D. Hoyt's, I was there, and then yes, I started. I got into sales, and so.
Well, tell me about Hoyt's. You said it's a favorite restaurant. You bartended and you waited. There's pretty good money at a. Is that a high end place? I'm not familiar with.
Well, you know, it's high end. I mean, the food is high end quality. The experience is high end, but you can still, you know, get a great bang for your buck there. And so, I think Pat and Cozy, they do a phenomenal job. They've got a great wait staff.
Where is it?
It's on 3rd and Washington. So right downtown, probably, if you're familiar with the Twin Stadium, it is three blocks east of the Twin Stadium.
Towards the better of the two cities.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm a St. Paul.
Yeah, yeah, no, nothing wrong with St. Paul. I love St. Paul. So, yeah, it's right there on 3rd and Washington Avenue North. And just, yeah, just a great
spot.
What's
your biggest tip you ever got?
Oh, man, my biggest tip? Probably somewhere between $200 and $300.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I used to. Yeah, it used to be a lot of.
Oh, I can picture you doing
a lot of good nights at Hoyt's.
You ever work conventions at like hotels or anything like that, where the roll on bar?
Yeah, no, not so much. Not so much. We would. So I started bartending a little later. There, so I was there for about 6 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, it was a great place. It was. It still is a great place. And
rolling
so,
in money.
I was able to take care. You know, pay some bills, pay some student loans.
Now, were your brothers and sisters and you all living in the same place?
So not when I was. Well, so I was on campus, and they were living in the same place. And then once I. Moved off campus. We weren't in the same place.
How did your stepfather leave while they were still in school?
Lavina. So Lavina was with Art for a little while, and then she started staying with my aunt, and then my brother. He was on his own.
That one that helped you out.
Yeah.
And so, when did you say to yourself, you know, the restaurant, it's a lot of hard work. The hours are kind of goofy sometimes. And, you know, I have to replace people that don't show up for work and they call me at the last minute. And boy, the tips are really good. But when did you decide, well, I think I'd like to get out of the restaurant business?
Yeah. So, you know, I was, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to wait tables my whole life. And so I wanted to get into sales and just get the experience. And I had three opportunities. One was with DirecTV, one was with CenturyLink, and then the other one was Key Cadillac. And so, little fact, my mother's nickname was Key. So her full name was Ernestine Nash, but everybody called her Key. And so I remember interviewing with Michael Stanzak, and he asked me, he said, well, why should I hire you? No experience, nothing at all. Why should I hire you over a guy who's got, 10, 15 years of experience, probably a book of business? And I was like, because you can teach me everything that I need to know. I don't have any bad habits to come to the table with. And so, needless to say, I was there for 5 years and did a phenomenal job. And it was a great, great place to learn how to interact, how to sell, understanding needs and wants, and, how to create those as well.
Well, one of the things that I've mentioned before is that I at one time thought, I could sell cars.
Yeah.
And some people make a very good living selling cars.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out I had to learn about cars.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to show them how to push buttons and do this and do that and do this and the warranty and know this and know. And I didn't want to sit and look at videos and brochures.
Yes.
And go to. I mean, it's a lot more than "Hi, can I help you?"
Yeah, correct. You know, it's a lot of product knowledge that you want to be tooled with. And the thing is the last thing you want is for somebody to walk in to your dealership and know more about the vehicle than you do as a salesperson. And so, you know, you really got to pride yourself on having that knowledge base. I can say one thing though, with the internet now, a lot of individuals do come in and they understand, like, hey, this is the car that I want, these are the features. So, you know, I think it's moving more towards that. You don't necessarily, I mean, I still pride myself on having the product knowledge, but, you know, again, it's all about the experience. And so what kind of experience do you provide the consumer when they walk in the door to the time that they're, you know, driving away in the vehicle? And usually a lot of folks are coming in understanding what they want already. And so if you have it.
Well, I used to sell shoes.
Uh-huh.
And I sold shoes so long my hands smell like feet. But I had a lot of soul brothers. Here I go. I do this too often. But a new audience, folks. So the point that it is when I sold the high-end shoes, there were no questions, even with parents fitting their children.
Yeah.
But when I sold the low-end family affordable shoes, I had tens of thousands of questions. Well, you know, are you sure this, that? So is that like it's like with a Cadillac, that the people that come in pretty much know what they want? I would assume that your turn down on finances is very infrequent.
Yeah.
And they pretty much know what they want, what their budget is, and it's pretty, is it an easy sell, or are you competing against Lincoln and Lexus?
So, you know, you have a lot of competition out there, and again, that's why it goes back to, you know, what kind of experience do you provide them? To answer your question about kind of that low-end, high-end scale, it really varies per person. The thing about selling pre-owned vehicles is, you know, depending on, you know, if it's a $2,500, $3,000 car, you know, most of the time you're going to sell that vehicle and it's going to have some issues that arise, you know, let's say in the first, you know, 30 to 90 days, you know. So then it's all about how do you react to those issues that come up. You know what I mean? So are you, oh, sorry, you got to deal with it? Or one thing I really enjoyed about Key Cadillac is that they would always try to help out no matter what. You know, even if it was a car that was, you know, it's got 90,000 miles and it's 10 years old and you bought it off the lot with no warranty as is. But if something came up, you know, Michael and the family would always try to help out. So it made my job as a salesperson a lot more enjoyable because I knew that, you know, I could help out the customer when they came back with issues. And, you know, you got to learn how to say no as well, because some individuals will try to take advantage of that. But yeah, it's, you know, and even for those, you know, high end folks who are, you know, buying the, you know, the Escalades or the V series, they would have questions, but usually they knew, like, hey, I've got a family of five. I need something that's going to haul luggage and tow. I'm looking at the Escalade.
You didn't sell a whole lot of $3,000 cars.
No, not a ton of them.
Pretty poor example. No. So, were you around when Cadillac came out with their Escalade? And did that take you by surprise? Copycat?
So I was around when the Escalade went not the very first model. So I believe the first Escalade was back in between 2000 and 2002.
Okay.
And then they reimagined the body in 2007. And so that new body changed in 2016. So I was around for that transition when they changed over to the new body style.
Yeah, it really surprised me when I saw the, I think it's a Navigator for Lincoln.
Yeah, the Lincoln Navigator. Yeah.
I'm thinking, wow, you know, I'm driving that car right there.
Yeah.
At Buick.
Yeah. Nice car.
And I'm thinking, why would somebody buy a, well, I'd say station wagon, but it's an SUV, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Lincoln and Cadillac, I mean.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more room inside to really make it pretty.
Yeah. Oh, people love them. People love them. And, you know, even vehicles of that size, I mean, they're smooth, quiet. And when you talk about, you know, families, they afford you all those amenities that you want, navigation, drop down DVD screens, all those things.
Do people try to talk down Cadillac salespeople?
Yeah, yeah, you gotta learn how to negotiate. That was one of the biggest attributes I learned, you know, was how to negotiate a deal and what that looks like, and, you know, again, when to say no.
Well, a lot of automobile dealers nowadays say one price only.
Yeah.
And that's that. And you don't get the deal.
Yep.
And I tried, and they said, no, this is the price.
Yeah.
Well, what fun is this?
Yeah, yeah, you know, no. And it, yeah,
you know, they bump up the trade-in.
Exactly.
That's the only way you're going to make
exactly.
the difference.
Yep.
So
yep.
It can be. I heard of a guy here in town that makes six figures selling cars.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. I believe it. It's one of those professions where, you know, once you're in the business, you know, 5 to 7 years, and, you know, one thing that was cool about Key Cadillac is I sold both pre-owned and new cars. But, like, those new cars, folks who lease those vehicles, if they have really good experiences, not only at the point of sale, but really in the service department afterwards, they'll keep coming back. You know what I mean? Like, the sales portion is a piece of it, but that service portion is really what keeps folks coming back.
Now, did you have ups were there a lot of walk-ins?
Not a ton. So, you know, Key Cadillac is a very destination-type dealership because it's on 69th and York, and there's not like a main highway drag of, you know, Audi, Jaguar, Porsche, yeah, you know, whatever it may be. It's like a standalone shop. So, you know, when folks did come in the door, you knew that they had did some research and they had found Key Cadillac. And so it, you know, it wasn't a ton of floor traffic, but I was always on the phone, calling, emailing, you know, that's how I kind of built my book of business up.
Yep.
And then, you know, when you get that floor up that was there to buy a car, that was great.
Are there any other Cadillac dealers?
Yeah. Let's see. There's one off of 394. Not too far in like Golden Valley, and then there's one in Roseville, and I believe there might be one further south.
Are they? Is yours shared, or is it Key Cadillac
only? Key Cadillac is his own. Yeah,
but are the other ones Cadillac and Buick, or Cadillac and Chevy? Or?
So Cadillac went under a process where they were kind of eliminating a lot of those. What's the best? How do you describe them? Kind of those partner stores, if you will, where, you know, you're selling a Buick and GMC brand.
Yeah.
They really wanted to get solely focused on a Cadillac and try to build that prestige back. And so I know a lot of those stores that weren't doing so well selling Cadillacs that were partner stores, they've kind of dropped the brand off. So I don't think there's a ton of them anymore, but I'm sure there's some that still do exist.
All right, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, let's talk about what you're doing now.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Awesome. Our guest this morning on KYMN, Quentin Moore. He's from Minneapolis, and he's the captain of the Aquitennial Ambassador Program. And in addition to that, he also works with the the YMCA. Oh, I almost started dancing.
When it's time for preventative maintenance on your new car or truck, you don't just take your car into anyone. At Witt Brothers Service in Northfield, you know you found a name you can trust. To start, we're a Napa Auto Care Center, so the technicians we employ are experts trained in every aspect of your vehicle's maintenance. This gives you the peace of mind in knowing that everything we do is accepted under the terms of your manufacturer's warranty. Add to that the fact that we use quality Napa parts that meet or exceed original equipment and specifications. And you have the one place where you can entrust all of your vehicles. Come see Whip Brothers Service in downtown Northfield today.
Flexion Care Suites on the campus of Three Links here in Northfield offers comfort care in a home-like environment. We provide compassionate, specialized end-of-life care to residents and families during phases of an incurable illness. We have a wonderful staff that provides the highest quality of care, supporting each resident's personal wishes. I am Susan Samuelson, Clinical Nurse Manager of Reflections. You can call me at 664-8809 for a tour of this beautiful facility.
We're just talking about Dale Finger, and Dale Finger was a shortstop on the QB team that I had the pleasure of playing on and managing. And anyhow, we want to find out, Quentin Moore, what are you up to now, and how does YMCA picture, how does that work?
Yes.
What are you doing?
So for the YMCA of the Greater Twin Cities, I am on our mission advancement team. And so pretty much what we do is we oversee the fundraising efforts for our 37 sites, locations. So that includes the camps, the workout facilities, our program sites as well. We assist the executive directors with their individual fundraising goals, and then we also have an association goal that we work towards as well.
Now, have you ever worked with one here in Northfield?
I have not. So I don't think so. Not all YMCAs in Minnesota are part of the YMCA of the Greater Twin Cities. Kind of umbrella, if you will. So there are some one-offs where they're standalone YMCAs.
Well, let me give you a lesson. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Name the first community to have an outside of the Twin Cities YMCA.
Northville.
How did you know that?
It was a lucky guess, Wayne.
That's a fact. As a matter of fact, the YMCA then picked up roots, whatever you say,
yeah,
and they donated it to the community of Northfield.
Wow.
For $1 to be used for community purposes.
That's huge.
And it was. It's right down the street here.
Okay.
And when I came to town 50 years ago, it was a police station.
I see.
And the fire hall was right next door, and a city council and police station.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1970, we built a public safety building, and then the city took their offices to an old school building here in town, and now this place is empty, and different people looked at it for different things, and ultimately the Northfield Arts Guild, a nonprofit, is now using it. So the intention of the original YMCA in this town,
yeah,
was to make sure that it was a community event center, mm-hmm, and they have a public bathroom in there.
I see.
So, anyhow, that's the story there.
Yeah.
And now we have a new YMCA, and it's out behind on Highway 3, south of town, where they have the big boxes that,
yeah,
kind of ruin small town. I mean, kind of. Anyhow, they have a beautiful place out there, and they have a lot of programming. And
yeah,
I, for one, thought, oh, when they went on their fundraiser for that, I was kind of leery, because there are so many great nonprofits in this community.
Correct.
You know, but by gosh, they got some good contributors, and
yep,
one of them I'll even mention, College City Beverage,
okay,
the Budweiser distributor,
mm-hmm,
big contributor, and there's more, I'm sure, but I can't,
yeah,
name them all. So do you travel all around the Twin Cities, set up dates? I'll see you Tuesday at 1:15, or I'll see you for breakfast on.
Yeah, so one of the joys of my position is getting out and meeting with donors and folks who are passionate about the community and who want to see their values fulfilled by giving to the Y. And so, you know, when you get to sit down with the individual donor and hear their story and learn their affinity for the Y and the Y, I guess, the reason that they give, you always learn some fascinating tidbits that you can, you know, not only go back and share with your team, but also share with, you know, other donors and get them excited about the Y as well.
Well, my experience with the YMCA is kind of unusual. I shouldn't say unusual. It's just that one time I hitchhiked up to St. Cloud,
uh-huh,
and the YMCA put me and this other guy I was with up.
Yeah.
And But before or after, during that time, the YMCA downtown St. Paul was a place you probably didn't want to go to.
Oh, I see.
And it was a gathering spot for individuals of a different lifestyle.
I see.
So that's my memory as a kid.
Yeah. You
know, but then I remember the YMCA is such a great outreach for maybe disenfranchised individuals.
Yeah, most definitely. So, you know, the great thing about the Y is, you know, whether you're, you know, an infant or an active older adult, there's a place for you. And no matter where you fall on the social economic status, there's an opportunity for you. So, you know, if you're active older adult that wants to be part of our Forever Well program, you can do that. If you're, you know, for instance, like our teens this year, we're giving away close to 6,300 free teen memberships throughout the summer at every location. And so, like, teens have just been able to come into the Y, enjoy the facilities, you know, work out, but also have some programmatic opportunities as well to develop their leadership, build character, and also bolster their confidence. So that's been really cool. So, yeah, when you talk about the programs that we have, I mean, it's a very huge scale and scope, but I think that's one of the very unique things about the YMCA and one of the things that community members can rally behind.
Now, we know there's an opportunity for teens, like you say, to participate in volleyball, basketball, and many other crafts, for example.
Yeah.
But do you find that sometimes it's hard to convince the individual who couldn't make the softball team, couldn't make the soccer team, to come and enjoy those as intramural at the YMCA? Do you find some resistance, like, oh, no, that's for poor people, or, oh, no, they're not good enough for me? Or
You know, not necessarily. You know, one of the programs is our youth sports programs. That, I mean, they've, in the last 2 years, they've went from, like, I think 1,200 kids to close to 6,000 kids. And so what you're seeing is a lot of kids are starting to drop out of sports at a much earlier age because either it's way too competitive, it's not fun, or somebody's telling them that they're not good enough. And so you see a lot of kids and parents and families actually rallying to the Y so that those kids can remain active, again, build confidence, and learn the importance of teamwork and leadership. So, you know, I don't think it's a hard sell, per se. I think, again, it's about experience. And when you come into the Y and you see that you've got, you know, caring adults there, you see that the facilities are up to par, and you know that, you know, you're going to be taken really good care of, you don't see too much resistance.
Well, what I'm going to do is take a final break.
Okay.
And I've got a final couple questions for you. Once again, my guest this morning, Quentin Moore of the YMCA of the Twin Cities.
Affordable living could be yours at Northfield Manor. Located on the campus of the Northfield Retirement Community, the Manor offers HUD-supported one-bedroom apartments for seniors age 62 and older, or for persons with a disability. If your annual income is less than $43,750 per year, you could qualify. Northfield Manor tenants enjoy all the amenities that the Northfield Retirement Community campus has to offer. For more information, call 507-650-7332 today. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
It takes special skills to be a Daikin Comfort Pro. Let's listen in as he senses an old, inefficient system's imminent demise.
So costly. Tormented by an ongoing battle over the thermostat. Its days are numbered.
You got all that by waving your hand in the air in our living room?
Get to know your local Daikin Comfort Pro.
This is Andy Straits with Straits 72 Degrees, your local third-generation business. Call me at 645-4040 or straightseating.com.
645-4040. Good morning time. 5 minutes before 11 o'clock, a reminder that a person's journey through grief is unique. Each loss is unique. Terry Knight's guest today is local author Donna Matthewitz with her book, A Journal for Your Journey. The trip without regard to the amount of time it takes to navigate through your loss and grief. Donna shares her own story of grief, losing her son to gunfire. In her interview, Donna talks about how she chooses or she chose the thought-provoking questions that guide those who use the journal and what happens to us if we don't process those profound losses. That's just 4.5 minutes away. I'm 15 with the author. I noticed a ring on your left index finger, whatever you call that.
Yeah.
So is that a wedding band?
Yes. So my wife and I, we just celebrated our 1-year anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
May 5th. So Janae and I are newlyweds, if you will. And,
sure.
And home in South Minneapolis and 2 pups right now. No children, but God willing, hopefully some
two
in the future.
2 pups?
Yep. So I got a boxer. He's 4 years old, Samson. And then we just got she's 13 weeks now, but we got her at 8 weeks. Her name is Amor. And she's a boxer terrier mix.
Well, why boxers?
So Janae grew up with 2 boxers, and so she was passionate about making sure that we had at least one, and now we have 2.
Did you have a dog in your childhood?
I did not. I grew up with no pets, and so I was a little apprehensive to get a pet, just understanding the responsibility that it entails and, you know, the time. But she convinced me, needless to say.
So, do you like them now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. For sure.
Is one of them kind of like yours?
You know, not really. I think they look at Janae more so as a playmate, and they kind of look at me as like the alpha, so they'll listen to me a little bit more, where, you know, they love being around her because they're just, you know, up and scratching her and all those things. So, yeah, they have a good time.
My guest this morning is Quentin Moore. And Quentin is captain of the Aquatennial and the ambassador program. What do you have coming up in the immediate future? And don't forget, folks, that the Queen of the Lakes is Vanessa Gonzalez from Northfield.
Correct. Correct. So just to let your audience know, Wayne, the Aquatennial Ambassador Organization is a nonprofit that is focusing on empowering women to achieve extraordinary futures. 3 pillars that we stand for, or stand on, if you will, is community, leadership, and volunteerism. And so obviously in a lot of the community programs, we see these things active. But in regards to what's coming up, the celebration for us kicks off third week of July. And so July 16th, we've got our Twin Cities Beach Blast. It's taking place at Lake Bede Makaska, formerly known as Lake Calhoun. And then on Wednesday, July 18th, we've got the Meet the Candidates at the City Center. And also the Center Point Energy Torchlight Parade that night. So you guys should all come out for that. And then on July 21st, that's when we will be crowning our new ambassadors. So that includes, you know, 2 new captains, a new Commodore, and then obviously 2 new princesses and a new Queen of the Lakes. And then we've got the best fireworks show in the state of Minnesota, if you ask me, presented by Target. And so that'll be taking place Saturday, July 21st as well. So whole week of festivities. We hope that folks from the Northfield community and surrounding communities can come out and join us. And we thank you guys for your support of our organization as well.
Do you only get to serve as captain 1 year?
Only 1 year. Yeah, so that, you know, there may be some I shouldn't say that. There will be some opportunities for me to stay involved with the organization. And, you know, I don't know if, like, I could come back, like, 2-3 years from now. I believe so, because I'm pretty sure some other captains have served, not necessarily consecutive terms, but other terms. So I'm sure there's an opportunity.
So who do you think is going to be the Commodore this year?
I have no idea. They've got that on secret wraps. But I did hear that they will be coming out to check us out in action during some of our appearances. So we don't know, but I'm guessing it could, you know, it's going to be somebody from the community.
Did you get to know Stan Stoltz?
Yeah.
Pretty good?
Yeah, Dan's a great guy.
Him,
Sarah, and Jim, they've been phenomenal in regards to making sure our group is comfortable and helping us out. So, yeah, it's been cool. Cool experience.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and we'll get out of here and make room for 15 with the author. And go over and see if Dale's at work behind the grill.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Wayne. Thank you, Northfield.
All right. That's Quentin Moore. on KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, a friend you can count on, 1080 on your AM dial for nearly 50 years, and now 95.1 FM, The One.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
A person's journey through grief is unique, and each loss we grieve is unique. My guest today is local author Donna Mathewitz with her book, A Journal for Your Journey, The Trip Without Regard to the Amount of Time It Takes to Navigate Through Your Loss and Grief. Welcome to the show, Donna.
Well, thanks, Terry. Thanks for having me.
Your own story on grief is very powerful. Will you share what started you on your journey just briefly so we can give people some context?
Sure, I would love to. It all started for us a little over 26 years ago. So I know that sounds like a long time ago, but when you've walked this path, you know, it does seem like years, and yet some things seem like yesterday. But what had happened is that we're married, we live in Hastings, at the time had two children. Our 18-year-old daughter had just graduated high school and was living in an apartment for the first time with her friend from school. And we had a 16-year-old son, Tim. I saw Tim off to school early that Friday morning. His buddy came in his big, noisy orange pickup truck, picked him up, took him off to school with him. And the next time I saw Tim, he was laying in a casket at the local funeral home on Monday afternoon. Tim had, along with a maybe dozen or so other kids, gone to a party outside of Hastings on that Friday night. I had talked to him a couple times, so he did some check-in with me. But what had happened, and you know, I'm sure he'd been at other parties in the past, but at this particular party, there was a real lethal combination of, as I always say, a dozen or so teenagers with their yet-to-be-developed brains, because mm-hmm. that's just true. Yeah. And especially given he was a boy besides, you know, risk-taking, and they're all immortal at that age. And they also had some beer. And then there was a 19-year-old acquaintance with a .44 caliber Magnum handgun. Mm-hmm. And by 9 o'clock that night, Tim had been shot at point-blank range and died instantly. Mm-hmm. So that began our, you know, a very traumatic, of course, you know, I just was leading a child loss group last night, in fact, and it's like, you know, you can have all these descriptive words about what grief is, but there really are no words for something like, you know, for the trauma and for the toll it takes on your mind and your body and your emotions and your spirituality. All of it is all encompassed when grief strikes like this. But we began our journey.
And it truly is an all-encompassing, and one of the things is that grieving is stressful.
It is. Hard work.
Yes, it is. And I don't think people understand. It is hard work. And your book, A Journal for Your Journey, is laid out in such a comforting way. I love that you ask some questions for the traveler to answer for themselves. The first one being, are you comfortable writing in this journal with honesty regarding your true thoughts and feelings? I think that one may be one of the most difficult for people, perhaps in particular men. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, we've been part of leading, facilitating a grief support group here in Hastings for over 20 years. And I speak to other, you know, several other groups throughout the metro and beyond. And, you know, it's really